Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά.
Diana Rouvas, welcome to SBS Greek.
Thank you for having me.
Very good to have you here. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That was a big achievement a few months ago.
Yeah.
July 2019 will stay with you for a long time.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time for me in the business, you know, like 20 years since my first deal, really, or 18 years, record deal. So it's, it was a long time coming. Like it was.
So when you say record deal, you mean your first record?
No, contract. I had a few negotiations in America and Europe and France, UK, all around. Yeah, I had a few world record deal negotiations that fell through at the time. So I was over there living in LA from 16 to like 23, performing there and doing all sorts of things. So, you know, it's been an uphill battle since then, but I've never placed my identity in that achievement, I suppose. So for me, having good people in my life and being aware of what's important, my health and stuff like that, that's kind of where I stay focused and focus on my own bar. So getting to the show at 35 as a female was a pretty... I'm happy that it happened that way and that at that point was my start, really, because I kind of like standing up for the fact that as a female at 35 in this business where we're often told you have to be 25 and you have to be lots of things, I think it's nice to be here now and say, no, now's good too.
Let's start from the beginning, because your biography says that you started music, singing vocals at age 4. Is this correct?
It sounds
not 14.
Ridiculous, but it's true, yeah.
4.
Mm.
So what did you do as a 4-year-old? For us who are not musically inclined, please explain.
Well, my parents were singers and singing teachers. And as a kid, I often sang, even as a little toddler, I had pitch and I had, you know, you couldn't shut me up, so... But because they were serious singers and teachers, it was in the house. They were teaching 24/7 and gigging all the time, performing. So for me, it was around me, and I was unusually disciplined for a little kid because I did practice. And what that means is doing certain vocal exercises. I used to sleep in their singing lessons, you see. I used to watch them teach. And be taken to bed from their lessons. So
both your parents were musicians, are musicians?
Still teaching.
Right, and music teachers.
Singing voice teachers predominantly in voice production, and mm-hmm. they performed for many, many years. Well, they were performing in the 70s and 80s, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s. My dad's 70 at the moment and mum's 64, so mm-hmm. they're not performing anymore. Too tiring. Too many years of no sleep.
So you come from a music family.
Yeah.
And I understand that your first introduction to music was through your family environment, not through structured music, voice lessons, so to speak.
Well, they were very structured. Don't get that. They were very, very serious. But, correct. Yeah, it was introduced. It was part of my. I was on stage in the womb, and as soon as I was born, I was in a bassinet on stage at some of their gigs, sleeping. You know, like with little
earmuffs to protect you from
the loud noise. Yeah.
If it wasn't for that environment, would you have had the same path?
I can't answer that. I can only speak for my experience. But you know, I was born into a family with music, and they both have brilliant instruments, voices, and taught brilliant technique. So that's obviously shaped dramatically how I sing. Yeah,
you play piano.
I do. I wouldn't call myself a brilliant piano player by any stretch of the imagination. But I write on the piano, and I have a lot of knowledge. But my grandfather, my papu, was a brilliant piano player and piano teacher, and so was my great-grandmother, Desi, and she was an opera singer.
From the Australian or the Greek side of the family?
The Greek side. So my dad's father, my papu, played the piano. his mother was an opera singer, and her sister was Diana, who was an opera singer as well. So I never met her. I did meet my great-grandmother, but my Diana, I never met her sister.
Do you remember surnames? Was that in Australia? Was it overseas? Tell us something about the Greek side of the family, the background. Where did they come from? When did they come in Australia? Tell us everything.
Well, I wish I knew enough. My great-grandmother passed in her mid-90s when I was 12. So my memory of her and her history is not that good. But I believe my grandparents came here in the 40s. My papu was a jeweler and a piano player, yeah.
And they came here from Greece?
Yeah, my family's from Samos.
From Samos? You mentioned something before we started recording about Egypt. Were they in Egypt before they came to Australia?
Well, I understand that my yaya was educated in Egypt. I'm not sure if she was there just before she came to Australia, but she was raised and educated in Egypt, so she spoke, which I believe many did at that time. She spoke five or six languages, translated for the courts. She could sing as well. Mm-hmm. Yaya had a beautiful voice as well.
Do you remember her singing?
Yes. She used to sing all the time when she cooked for you. She would sing.
Do you remember what she used to sing?
All different things. Anything. Not one song. Sometimes singing Greek, mm-hmm. sometimes singing French, oh. sometimes singing English. Yeah. Brilliant cook. Like her father, I think, was a quite a successful chef in Egypt. So she could cook.
Do you cook?
No. I make a good avro lemono, that's it.
Avro lemono.
That's it. That's my one claim to cooking something. But no, I could learn.
You could learn.
I could learn.
Well, you can go on our website. We have a very good cooking podcast. The podcast is in Greek, but the recipe and the instructions are in English. You get the best of both worlds.
All right.
There you go.
Challenge accepted. Next time I see you, I'm going to bring you... my favorite thing is dolmades.
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 We have five or six recipes of dolmades.
I've made them once. There's such a technique to getting that texture and everything right?
Okay, well, challenge accepted. We have to have a dolmades competition, you know.
Oh, I'm going
to
lose.
We're not into losing, we're into winning. So let's go back into that.
Yeah.
You come from a music family. You were always into music. You were surrounded by music. Mm. You don't only sing, but you write songs and music as well. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the reasons why you went to the States, to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
To work as a singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
How long did you stay there?
I stayed in LA for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. With previous management from when I was young, and I did, you know, I worked with Rufus and Chaka Khan, some great musicians who played with Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, Aretha Franklin, really heavy musicians. So that was a brilliant experience, of course. And I've been writing since I was a little kid, you know, 8 or 9 years old. I started writing because I had about 30 toothbrushes. This sounds weird. Other girls had Barbies and I had all these toothbrushes, and every day would be like days of our lives with these toothbrushes. And one of them sang. She was a singer and her name was Danny for some reason, and she had to write songs. So I asked my parents for a book so that the toothbrush in the story and the game could write songs. And the funny thing about that is that I couldn't write without a toothbrush. I used to carry it around with me even after the game ended. I would carry this toothbrush to the piano. And one day I shut the blinds in the studio and I thought, I got to get rid of this toothbrush. If you're shutting the blinds, this is weird. You know, I've got this toothbrush at the piano.
I guess whatever gives you inspiration.
And I did take them to America with me, is the point. I used to take them when I traveled, but I lost them in the last 5 or 6 years.
Why did you come back
to
Australia?
Ran out of money and it just became difficult in that sense. I wasn't earning money, you know.
That's always a bit of a problem, isn't it?
It's a little bit of a problem when you're in your mid-20s.
They say that it's a very difficult industry to break into and make a name. Apart from the fact that it is competitive, what else did you find in that industry that actually was maybe a hindrance or a barrier to your development as a singer-songwriter?
The positive thing for me is that I had a consciousness of the business from a kid because my parents had a record deal in the 70s. They did get, I believe, kind of taken for a bit of a ride at some point. So there was a very realistic understanding of the business from a small age. So I definitely was not unrealistic about what it was. My focus was always on the work and being as good as I could be, which is still the same. There's different barriers, I would say. From a business point of view, the business changes all the time, and that would go for all of these, you know, your position as well, right? It's always evolving and changing, and keeping up with that is one thing. But as an artist, there's two sides for me where I'm creative, which means we forget time and space, and then you're a businesswoman at the same time, which takes you a while to kind of get together on that side of it because you realise that that's just as important. So I think the barriers are that, well, I think it's all about timing as well, and there's a big personal journey that happens for many artists. For me, believing in myself, having that self-worth and chasing things a bit more has been a lesson for me.
Diana, how do you overcome the so-called failures, the knockbacks, the no's in the industry? I mean, you audition and audition and audition and you go to various places and you speak to various people and you knock on doors. We've heard these stories millions of times.
Of course.
You participate in competitions and what have you. And it's one no after another. And many great talents actually give up. They say, sorry, that's not for me. And I understand this is one of the biggest barriers. Actually, just keep on pushing.
That would be true. And I always say, I mean, I've taught a lot of singing in my life as well. And I always say to students who would want everything yesterday, you know, a younger generation, especially with the current internet and the way that everything works is fast. And I would often say, what happens if your time is later? And I always say at my shows, you know, a lot of us do give up before our time, perhaps. Do you know what I mean? If I stopped at 30, which seems like a reasonable age to think, okay, I've had enough, I wouldn't be with you right now and I wouldn't have gone back on the show and I wouldn't be a better singer than I was 5 years ago. I think for me, which I kind of said earlier, my identity is not wrapped up in those kind of achievements. I respect them and I fight for them. But the most important thing for me is, did I do my job right? Did I connect? Did I do everything I could to honour my gift? And if I did and I have a bad day, then that's it. It's not in my hands. The wins and the losses are subjective, right? It's to who's looking at what that is. I learn. My whole journey has been, and everyone's, is a lesson. And so I think if you knock down, I'm grateful because it's a lesson. If I want to open my eyes and go, what did I learn? What would I do different next time? That's an opportunity, I think. I don't know that it's as negative as we all think it is. I think it's life experience is valuable. And we don't know when the timing is right. But if you can't live without something, that's it. That's how I look at it. I can't live without it. Everyone's going to have an opinion. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes you get annoyed and you go, you know. But I don't read a lot of stuff. I don't really, for good family, good company.
Let's talk about this a little bit because I am interested in your perspective.
Mm.
If I understand correctly, you see everything you do as a learning experience rather than an achievement or a failure or, you know, a step up. Or it's a learning experience, right?
I see it across, not up or down.
Okay. You can elaborate.
It's kind of like vocal cords. People think often that they go up, they go across in your in your neck. And so to open the throat and relax or to live life and think around you rather than I'm up here or I'm down here is a better idea, I think. Because at the end of my life, I think the greatest things I will remember will be the company I kept, whether I did my job well, whether I touched people's hearts and I was authentic in my deliverance of what I do, whether I some record company told me I was rubbish or not is not going to be a thought at the end of my life. I don't know that that's going to be as important as a lot of other things. So I aim to focus on, whilst I'm incredibly driven and incredibly passionate about getting further in my career, I would not be doing the things that I do. But my reason for it is not, you know, fame and money. I think I would have done anything else if I thought being rich was my goal. I'd have a few more things in the bank and the assets, you know. So that's, for me, it's all about that. It's about the legacy of my spirit. And opportunities like Eurovision give us a chance to reach more people. That allows me to do what I love longer and further without having to go teaching a million people a week, which I have done many times. Which I love, to be honest, and miss, but different jobs to make a living. So it's all about perspective. I've never really been depressed about losing anything because I have gained so much.
Do you teach singing? Not piano?
No, singing.
Singing. Now let's talk about Eurovision, because that's the next big step for you after The Voice, right? How are you approaching Eurovision?
I will be approaching Eurovision like I've approached anything I've ever done with singing, whether it's 5 people, 5 million people, 500 people. Every time I open my mouth is important to me. And so whilst it is a competition, I will be just doing what I always do, which is being way too hard on myself, which is a lesson I'm constantly learning is not that necessary. working hard and aiming to enjoy that moment. That's something that's one of my biggest lessons, is enjoying the moment, because I think when you get really serious about what you're doing, that starts to, you forget a bit about the fun of what it is. You know what I mean? Like, I've got to do this right, I've got to perform right. So Eurovision for me is going to be me practicing, having a bit more fun whilst still maintaining the level of discipline and work that I always have.
What are you going to perform?
I'll be performing a song that I co-wrote with Lewis Skrull called Can We Make Heaven?
So you wrote the song?
Yeah.
How important is it to surround yourself with positive people, people who believe in you and are supportive? Because there is a lot of noise, I understand, for everyone, not just you, but because
100%.
You are more on the public arena. And people know you more, right? They recognize you probably when you go out.
Sometimes.
And I understand that often this noise can be very negative, right? Especially from those who have vested interests in shooting down the competition. For many people, you are the competition. How do you deal with that? Because this can be a very complex picture. And I understand from reading biographies that can have a very detrimental effect on people.
Yeah, and I have read many, you know, circumstances of other artists having really suffered with that. It doesn't bother me too much, if I'm honest. I don't pay attention to it too much. I don't read YouTube comments. Whilst there's a lot of love on there too, because I had a friend go, why don't you read them? There's lots of beautiful things on here. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm grateful for that. I just focus on the work. It's not, they don't know who I am. They didn't do my work. So whilst there is that energy out there, you know, I meditate and I practice keeping my vibration high enough that I'm not really, you know, I'm not really interested in what that is. It's you know, if one of my closest friends or my father says to me, you're an idiot, they might be right because they know me, right? They know me. But if a stranger says to me, you're an idiot, well, they don't really know me, so it doesn't upset me. It's kind of like I had one. I did read, first time in years, I read some comments the other day on a YouTube compilation of greatest, which was a compliment video of best blind auditions, you know, and mine is the first one because a friend sent it to me and said, you're the first one. I was like, oh, I don't want to look at this. Anyway, I went down, there's some beautiful comments, and one guy writes, I've had some funny things like couldn't sing before, can't sing now. I think it's hilarious. I think that's funny. Can't sing then, can't sing now. All right, you know, okay. But the comment the other day was, I love how the first chick, me, looks like Robert De Niro when she starts getting into it. And I wrote back, I said, hey, I love Robert De Niro. You know, like, so that people don't know you. So it's not, it's probably most likely not that personal, you know? Mm. And if you have the capacity to get online and say nasty things, what are you doing all day? I don't have time for that. If I read something, I don't have time to go, you know what, I need to tell this person how crap they are. It doesn't even come into my head.
Mm. What does the next day hold for you if you win Eurovision?
Do you mean on the inside or the outside?
Both.
I have no idea. I don't know what happens after that moment.
You're not there yet?
I'm not there yet.
Okay. So what does the next day hold for you if you don't win Eurovision?
I'm not there yet.
You are in your mid-30s. Where do you see yourself? What's your vision?
What is
the pinnacle, what if there is one?
My vision and goal has always been the same, which is to write and release an authentic record that represents my experiences, my truths, that has great musicianship on it, and perhaps bringing and maintaining some of the original concepts of what music is and was when Ella Fitzgerald and Donny Hathaway and these artists had to do things in one take and there was an authenticity about their deliverance. I would like to maintain that on a record that I release in the future, maybe a little different to this particular song, but that's my goal, is to have that authentic piece of music reach people around the world would be nice, and for that to be a legacy, that I was a singer who worked hard and spoke the truth. That's what I would like, and so I haven't done that yet.
I wish you best of luck with this one. Not just one record, but many to come.
Thank you. That would be nice.
Who are your mentors? If there were one or two people who you look back and say, so far, they were instrumental in their advice and in my development. If there are any. Maybe there aren't. Maybe there are too many for you to remember.
There is quite a few, yeah. There's quite a few... For me, predominantly more spiritual mentors, people who have...
Like?
Well, a very good friend and lady called Marion Deary, who was, you know, guided me through a lot of things in my life. And as an artist, taking care of the inside is just as important as the outside. And so I've kind of focused a lot on that, and she's... But there's a few in that realm for me.
Who do you admire in terms of artists?
Many. I can't... It's really hard for me to say one. Obviously, when I was younger, I worked with Tina Arena and toured France with her when I was 17, and she has been a type of mentor over the years. Incredible woman. You know, she fights for what she believes in. She's determined. She's authentic. She would be one for sure. But there's many.
Have you sung Greek songs ever?
Once, yeah.
Which one?
Oh, I can't tell you.
Why not?
It was about 20 years ago. I don't remember. But a Greek family friend of mine told me to sing a particular song. I'm good with accents and I'm good with languages, to be honest. So I learned it well, but I can't tell you what I was... I can't remember what it was called or what I was singing. It was about 20 years ago.
So was it a traditional or a pop?
No, I think it was a ballad, a pop ballad by a female, okay. But I can't remember the name. But
have you gone to Greece?
Yeah, I've performed there.
Where?
Mykonos.
Mykonos? By yourself or...?
I was hired to perform on a ship for a company, Greek-Australian company. And I was only there for a week, and I went with my guitarist, and we met a band on the ship who were from America, and we did a set together. Mm-hmm. And I got the flu from hell. Yes, and I nearly died singing through the flu. It was like it was everything. Fevers, bronchitis, my eyes, my nose. You know what I was most upset about? The fact that I couldn't taste everything, because I'm in Greece, the oil, you know, the whole thing.
The olive oil, you mean?
I love to eat. So I was very upset about the food situation. Because by the time I got better, I was coming back.
Mm. What do you most enjoy singing?
I most enjoy singing ballads that have space for me to interpret however that may feel on the day. I'm not often a fan of a restricted up-tempo song. I prefer it to be one that I can express freely in.
Hence you going for really difficult songs like Hallelujah?
Well, there is space in that. You know, when you do that live, you can slow it down, you can move, you don't have to go up, you can, you know, those kind of songs give you opportunity to feel what you feel at the time, and I like that idea. Because otherwise you're forced to feel what you have to feel in certain songs. Whereas when they're like that, you can, what's today? What do I feel today about that?
Mm.
I like that.
What do you express when you sing? They say singing is a form of storytelling. For us who do not sing, we don't actually understand that journey, that space you enter as a singer when you express emotions, when you tell a story. Like we watched you at the finals, at The Voice. So explain that space, you know, as an artist, as a creative person. Just explain it for us.
Emotionally, I think you have no choice. Well, maybe some people do. But it's for me, it's an incredibly vulnerable place. You can't really hide. And so even on days where I imagine that I prepare myself to perform, in quotation marks, you know, you can only practice that to a certain degree. But once you walk out and there's an energy and there's an audience and there's people, singing forces you to have a conversation that you wouldn't otherwise have, and to connect by connecting to yourself. Maybe not every singer does that, I'm not really sure. I can't speak for how that feels for others, but I feel like I have no choice in that moment.
Leonard Cohen said that when people like a song, it is because the singer cannot hide himself. It's because the artist cannot hide himself.
Beautiful.
Do you recognize any truth in that?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, that's it. You can't hide, yeah. I feel like I can't hide. So all my pain and all my joy and anything that is of my life starts to filter in that moment, whether I like it or not.
When are you at your best?
Well, there's times where I think I've been at my best and others may not, and there's times where others think I am.
I mean, on stage. When you go on stage, can you recall moments that you were 100% happy with yourself, saying, yes, I nailed it?
As a perfectionist that aims to be less critical, I don't often say that there's a moment I feel like I nailed it. But there are moments it's not something I think about that way. It's more, did I do everything I could? And I'm happy with that.
They say, and I've heard this from other musicians mostly, who have given up after years, let's say, playing piano.
Right.
Or playing an instrument. And they say this, you practice for the whole year and then you make one mistake and that's it.
That is absolutely true. You do practice a lot. And then in that moment, you know, you may make a mistake, or as a singer, sometimes it's not in our hands whether we are always healthy, whether we have a flu, whether, you know, there's many things that are stressful for singers that are not for a standard day-to-day job, where you go, if this happens, I have to go on anyway, which is bad news and unhealthy for me to do so, but I have no choice because the show must go on. Whoever created that, we need to check that. many artists have sacrificed their health to be on stage. It needs to change. The mentality needs to change. But yes, you practice and you make one mistake. But if that...
Do you think of that at all, or you don't have it in your mind?
I have learnt that if that is part of my thought process, I will not do it.
Mm-hmm. So you learn to overcome that.
I have learnt to accept my human side, and that is the one thing that connects you to an audience. I remember one performance, I forgot a whole heap of my own lyrics, and I had to stop the song because I just went blank, which is always a fear, but I wasn't on TV. But I started joking, and I said, I wrote this, you know, I swear I wrote this, and and started making all these jokes, and I'm asking my band and they don't know the lyrics, and I'm going, why don't you know the lyrics? And some guy's like, something about a mirror. I'm like, what is going on here? Audience is cracking up. And in that moment I was like, it's live. It's life and it's live, and that is what we do, and check it out. And I just felt like everyone in the crowd was my friend in that moment because of that error. I've learned that there's...
So you owned up to it, basically.
I have learned that there is a lot of power and a lot of beauty in that moment. And so I think that if you have that moment, maybe you're lucky. Maybe perfectionism is going to kill us. I'm not quitting, so they're my options. It's black and white. You let it defeat you and you leave, or you keep going. And what keep going means you accept. I struggle, but I'm always learning.
Mm.
Maybe, you know.
Tayana, you kept your surname, Tayana Ruvas.
Mm.
Have you ever thought of changing your surname? It's not a problem in the industry.
If it is or it isn't, it's not my problem. That's my name.
Great many people change their names, their surnames.
Yeah.
You know, to blend in, basically.
I'm happy with my name.
So it wasn't an issue, even in the States?
No, nobody's ever spoken to me about my name.
So you're keeping it?
I'm keeping it.
We're not going to be looking you up with a different surname.
And imagine that. I mean, that'd be a bad thing now for me to do that. Who is she? She used to be. No. It's been too long. It's.
What if you get married?
For performance, no. Ruvas.
Ruvas.
I have to honour my family too. I mean, there's a lot of musicians and singers in the Ruvas side. And hey.
One of the most popular Greek singers.
And
yes,
of course, Sakis Ruvas is out there as well. His family's from Samos, no. There's got to be a thing, yeah. When I went to Greece to perform, the airport went mental over my passport because of Ruvas. Ruvas, how you want to, yeah. And I thought I was going to get arrested because everyone's screaming at me. This woman starts screaming and I'm thinking, oh my God, what is going on? It was because of the surname. She thought I was related or something. You know, and maybe there is a relation, but I had a heart attack. She said, "Rad!" I was like, oh, no, I'm from Australia, Greek Australia. I don't know if I'm related, but it's. I am not. I don't know him. It's. Please don't arrest me.
Would you like to perform with him?
I think that would be amazing. Come on.
Sakis Ruvas and Diana Ruvas.
Who never met, who have the same, not that common surname, and family is from the same place.
There you go. Well, we wish you best of luck.
Thank
you. Who knows? Maybe we can put in a call for him.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time. Wishing you all the best for Eurovision and, most importantly, in your future.
Thank you.
May all your dreams come true, and may 2020 be a much better year than you dream.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Κάντε like, μοιραστείτε, σχολιάστε. Ακολουθήστε μας στο Facebook, στο SBS Greek.